the Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics. Discover the world's leading brands at bionic.radio.
And this time on the Radio Today programme, we have a very special guest. Now, if you've been on BBC Local Radio or listened to it for the last 3 decades, you'll recognise this guy's name and his voice as well. Before joining the BBC as a Westminster correspondent, he was doing the same thing for IRN. He was at LBC way back before that. He was on air in the first week of Radio City in Liverpool 47 years ago. But he's just left his job at BBC Local Radio as their man at Westminster. Patchy's covered for the last 37 years. It's an honour to welcome one of the best of our industry, and I mean that. It's the king of the two ways. It's Paul Rowley. Hi, Paul.
Hello. I'm more importantly than that, I'm a radio listener, Stuart. From the age of 7, when I first heard Alan Freeman doing Pick of the Pops on the O-Light programme, I knew I wanted to be in radio. But hey, I came from a Lancashire market town called Ashton in Makerfield, which is near Wigan, halfway between Liverpool and Manchester. And I've been so lucky every step of the way to be there at the right time. I've never actually applied for a proper job, to be honest with you. And in those days, word of mouth was quite important. There weren't that many of us, and I've just been lucky to be there for such a long period of time, 47 years as a journalist since I was a teenage scribbler on the Southport Visitor, and then 20 years in commercial radio of that, and 28 at the BBC. It's been an extraordinary journey. And I've been the most luckiest person in the world, to be honest with you.
Well, we'll have a little kind of look through your CV shortly. But it's a couple of weeks now since you left the BBC, obviously a long time to be there. How are you feeling about that now?
I'm overwhelmed, to be honest with you, because I was expecting to go on a week last Friday, and I was talking to all the radio stations. I'd tell them in advance I was leaving, and it was busy week anyway with the budget. So I said, why don't we do something on Friday and let the listeners know I'm going on that day? I didn't expect the response I got. A lot of the great names in broadcasting, Jeremy Vine, Victoria Derbyshire, and Simon Bates were among many people, without me knowing, went on Twitter to say, how can this man go? He's an institution. Maybe I should have been in an institution. People have called me a legend. I think more a legend, to be honest with you. And it's been overwhelming. And the most important bit of all that as a radio listener is a response from listeners. A lady on Radio Lancashire called Heather in Bamber Bridge, while I was on talking to our Graham, as I call him, Graham Lively, on their breakfast show, burst into tears saying, you can't go. You've helped me through COVID. You've helped me through Brexit. And I didn't realise the impact I had in that respect, because I'm on so many radio stations, 40 at the BBC. In my commercial radio days at Independent Radio News, it was around about 180 when I left at the end of 1993. These days, there are about 500 commercial stations. But to get that and to go on to Radio Leeds after I'd left the BBC, and Gail Lofthouse on the mid-morning show read out about a dozen emails from people who clearly have had this kind of emotional attachment with the listeners as well as the presenters. And I was unaware of the extent of that. I know what I want to do, and I know what I want them to say, that they like what I do. And I do admittedly do it slightly different from the norm. But it's knocked me out, to be honest with you. I am quite humbled by it all.
As you say, that connection that radio has with its listeners has kind of shone through in that. But I suppose the reason for that is, as you say, you don't do necessarily what everybody else does. You know, when it comes to doing a two-way on a show, you put a little bit more into it and you target it to the station that you're on more so than other people do.
Well, I think that's the trick, to be honest with you. And because I'm a radio listener, I know all the tricks after listening for so long before I eventually got into the industry. And of course, I don't just talk about politics. My view is, and Terry Wogan always said, that people don't listen to the radio. They kind of half listen, and they're often moving around. So when I go onto a radio station to talk about politics from Westminster, they're listening to their local station, and largely you would have thought they have an attachment with that station and their presenters because they're from that area. I'm an uninvited guest in many respects, coming onto all these radio stations. So my view is that I want to sound as if I'm that radio station's person that is sent to Westminster to report for them and them alone, and not the 20 other stations that I appear on that particular morning. So because I've got a love of football, which I've also covered throughout my time in journalism. I can always reference their football teams because I know about it anyway. Because of my age, and I'm 67, that I know the music policy of our stations and the target audience. The audience knows those records that I grew up with and the comedy we grew up with as well. So I'll add a little bit extra in many respects. Added value is what I was told I gave at the BBC. I don't think they got what they expected to get, because I was a foot in the door merchant as a journalist for my days in newspapers, breaking a lot of big stories in the 1980s in Liverpool, where I won, thankfully, a lot of awards for it. At the same time, I still think what drives me is you've got to make people smile, you've got to make people laugh. And as I found on Friday with Heather in Bamber Bridge, I seemingly can make people cry as well.
As you mentioned, there's been so many lovely words written about you. And one of my favourite tweets I saw was actually from you on Twitter on the day that you were leaving. And you shared your Rowley rules, which I'm just going to read out now because these are brilliant. Write for the listener, not the institution. Tight cues, maximum three lines, present tense, avoid acronyms, no verbiage, limit names, shorten job descriptions, use punchy adjectives, enjoy doing it. That's just the last 50 years summed up in, you know, how to do radio, isn't it?
It is, absolutely. And always look at it from the point of view of the audience, which, of course, I am still the audience. I still consume an awful lot of radio, both in the BBC and commercial radio, because you've got to be aware of changing events as well. Even as I grow older, I'm the oldest guy in town on the wireless in many respects, apart from Tony Blackburn, I suppose. It's just keeping it simple. At the same time, to have that polish, hopefully, and to sound as if I'm your radio station's man at Westminster, that can be slightly different, to push it over the barriers a bit. Yes, I do get into trouble. Yes, I've been known to sing on occasion, and some of my jokes have fallen flat. I apologise for that if you were offended, but hopefully you listened and you remembered, and that's the most important thing about broadcasting. The other great thing I always think, the broadcasters I love, like Kenny Everett, Roger Scott, Tony Blackburn, Keith Skews, they're great communicators, and they still have that, and sadly Roger and Kenny have now left us, but you know, they still have that great enthusiasm for a wonderful industry that it will never leave me, and that's a great thing about it. It's such a personal thing, but a personal thing hopefully that involves millions of people that may have heard me over the years.
And you mentioned listening to Fluff on the Light programme when you were kind of 7 years old in your bedroom, so like a lot of people who ended up in radio, it was always the dream for you. And I think you will have just turned 13, just became a teenager as the pirate radio stations were closing and Radio 1 was starting. So as somebody wanting to get into radio and being enthusiastic about it, that was a great time, wasn't it?
It was. With Alan Freeman, that was the only programme on radio that played pop records. I mean, you get the smattering on programmes like Saturday Club and Easy Beat, but the BBC really didn't take that music seriously. And I was born 20 miles away from Liverpool, where the greatest music in the world was coming from in 1964, when Radio Caroline North came on air, and I wanted to run away from home and to become a pirate radio disc jockey, but I was only nine and I couldn't swim. I still can't swim for that matter, but that did really change my life. And over the years, I've done documentaries about August the 14th, 1967. I was 12. I was crying, saying, I want commercial radio now. Well, we didn't get it until 1973 when LBC and Capital came on the air, and I joined LBC in 1987, and a year later it came to the Northwest, first at Piccadilly Radio when I was still a student journalist, and then 3 months as a real journalist on the Southport Visitor newspaper. Radio City came on the air. I phoned them up when they said they were covering non-league football. I was covering non-league football on the newspaper, and they asked me to come in and do a piece on their first programme. I recorded it. I pre-recorded it. They didn't trust me at that stage. I was just out my teens. They asked me to come back for the subsequent week. I did it for the rest of the season. Within 2 weeks, they asked me to co-present a programme with the sports editor, Wally Scott. And I did that for the next 4 years, by which time I'd become the editor of the Times. Well, I was the news editor of the Bootle Times at the age of 21. I joined the station full-time in 1977, stayed for a decade, became its local government editor, which sounds a very boring job title, but far from boring story, because I was covering for 4 years a national story every day when the militant tendency ran Liverpool City Council. There was drama every day, frankly. I was on independent radio news all the time. And at the end of it all, when they kicked 47 councillors out of office, when Derek Hatton and a dozen militants were kicked out of the Labour Party, I'd won a lot of awards for that coverage. I went to independent radio news in 1987. The first local government editor of Radio City, John Perkins, was the editor of IRN. I'd known him throughout that period of time. He asked me to come down. I stayed at IRN for 7 years and then crossed the floor in 1994 to join the BBC. And it was non-stop. I've never really had a proper job interview. I had a whale of a time, and I've been incredibly lucky.
Wow. that was a quick trot through 30 years or so. When you moved to Westminster with IRN initially, what was it like then? We were in an area where we don't have 24-hour news. How was covering politics then different to how it's been in more recent times?
The oddity is, having covered politics in Liverpool and coming to Westminster, it's much quieter at Westminster, believe it or not, because it was non-stop for a while. But what I was doing effectively every day, I was interviewing the big names in politics. So I got to know Tony Blair, Gordon Brown, David Blunkett, Robin Cook, from the government, Michael Howard and Norman Tebbit, you know, and the big names, Douglas Hurd at the time. And you got to know them on a personal level because you were constantly interviewing them. And I was so privileged to be doing that and also to appear on IRN. At the end of, if I was on the late shift, I'd go home and listen to the 1 o'clock news on the radio, which was going out on every commercial station across the south of England and, of course, across the whole of the country. And I'd virtually done everything in that bulletin. I thought, wow, I can go to bed a peaceful man that I'm in every one of those bulletins across the UK. And I thought, to be honest with you, in those glory days of commercial radio in the 70s and 80s, I would be there for life if they'd have me, never thinking I'd cross the floor to join the BBC, to be frank with you.
And at the time, in the kind of late 80s and 90s, there was this strong link between IRN and LBC. So LBC wasn't what it is today in terms of the station it is, but you were on LBC back then as well.
Indeed, and worked with the best in the business, to be honest with you. I learned so much from the likes of Douglas Cameron, who, to my mind, was the best ever newsreader in this country. Doug's, I think, 87, 88 these days, but still got the voice. Brian Hayes was doing the phone-in, the best phone-in presenter in the country, in my view. And then in 1990, Brian lost his job at LBC. It was devastating. I thought, hang on, I think I'm quite good and quite versatile, which is my great trick, because I could do football as well as news and other things and have an interest in music. And I then thought to myself, well, maybe. Brian, of course, went on to have a stellar career at the BBC, at Radio 2 and then at 5 Live. And we worked together as well in that time once I joined the BBC. But it was a great time at IRN with the likes of Douglas Cameron as a newsreader. Ed Boyle was a great inspiration to me covering politics because he did it differently and, like me, was a great fan of Kenny Everett. And that's what I always thought. You've got to be remembered if you're on radio. It's pointless just giving people facts and figures. You've got to dress it up a bit and make it interesting for the listener who may not care about politics because it's quite abstract in certain respects. Yes, in recent years with COVID and Brexit, it directly affects people, but some of the stuff needs a bit of light, as you know, so that's what I tried to bring to it. But IRN was a wonderful place to work. But then in 1992, the contract was taken over by ITN. I was one of the lucky ones. In fact, we all were at Westminster. We survived because lots of people lost their jobs. And then in 1993, LBC lost its franchise. That was devastating for the first commercial station in the country to lose that. And by then, I'd already agreed to join the BBC. So it felt then when I crossed the floor, or in my case, walked up the stairs, the three of us at Westminster to join more than 100 people at the BBC. It was a massive organisation. I thought it was the right time to move. Then I was in my late 30s. And, of course, the listeners to BBC local radio, like me, were often changing from commercial radio to listen to the BBC. So it felt the right move at the right time.
And that job you went to do is what you ended up doing right up until a couple of weeks ago, political correspondent for BBC local radio. I know you did go and do some other things in Westminster as well, and you did some TV and things like that. But why was it always BBC local radio where you wanted to stay?
Because I started there indirectly, because back in 1972, when I was a schoolboy in the sixth form, believe it or not, and this sounds rather grand, I wrote a comedy series, which was broadcast on two BBC local radio stations. Brian Smart, I thought, was the best presenter on BBC local radio. He was only about 3 years older than me at Radio Merseyside. And I used to write to all these stations. I got a bit bored with Radio 1 on medium wave by the early 70s, started to get interested in BBC local radio. You could pick up where I lived, Radio Merseyside, Radio Manchester, what was then Radio Blackburn, which became Radio Lancashire, and Radio Stoke. And I would write to these stations, and amazingly, and they were only broadcast on VHF, as it were, very high frequency, FM these days. Not many people had those sets. Thankfully, my mum did. And they would read my letters out on air. So I would then start to write to the stations. Brian played me jingles, played me music, and liked reading out my letters. And then I wrote this comedy series, which Radio Manchester heard about it. So it was broadcast on both stations on one occasion. And it was relayed last week on The Late Show on Radio Merseyside and Radio Lancashire and Radio Cumbria. And people then contacted me and said, this is amazing. And it was almost 50 years ago. So I then thought, well, maybe if I'm not going to be a disc jockey like Alan Freeman, I can be a comedian. And I tell my parents I wanted to be a comedian, and they laughed at me. They're not laughing now. It's an old Bob Monkhouse joke. But I did think about being a comedy writer at that stage. And then it's so weird that I'm, you know, here's a would-be disc jockey, failed, would-be comedian. I started doing non-league football at Radio City, and I ended up as a political correspondent. It was a very strange move that was not planned in any way other than I wanted to be on the wireless somewhere.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creators of the Bionic Studio. Listening, watching, reacting to and learning from every spoken word, caller, tweet and SMS to unmix, unlock and understand your content. The Bionic Studio transforms everything about radio except the way you make it.
We said at the start of this, you know, you're known in BBC local radio as the king of the two-way. I know so many presenters who, when they see your name on their running order, they know everything's safe, everything's going to be all right. And this is mainly because you just do so many of them. How many have you done over the years, do you think?
I reckon I do roughly about 3,000 to 4,000 a year. And whenever some of my colleagues, big names, do even half a dozen, they are cream crackered. I remember talking to David Cameron, who told me he was cream crackered, and he did use the word, what it really means, after six. So he loved talking to me because it saved him going on all these radio stations. But I love it. And people say to me, don't you get bored doing all these radio stations, doing the same old pitch every time? Well, it's not the same old pitch, because when I'm on Radio Leeds, I might mention Billy Bremner and Norman Hunter. And when I'm on Radio Merseyside, I might mention Kenny Dalglish and the Beatles. So there is always that connection, which is deliberate on my part, but it's also genuine. I'm not inventing it. I really do care for these people in showbiz and in football and in pop music and in comedy, which is my great love to be honest with you. I just went off and did something else, which is incredibly serious, covering politics. And off the air, I am very serious. I do an awful lot of prep before I go on air. I listen to everything, I watch everything, I read everything, and then I decide, what of 5% of what I know am I going to put on air? I'm not going to complicate it too much. I'm not going to use acronyms that you often hear in certain parts of broadcasting. What is 2% of GDP after all, or the SNP, or the DUP, what is Article 50? So I try to not complicate it and hopefully connect with real people. I always think of my mum, to be honest with you. My mum really was very pushy with me to get me through my education, and was delighted when I appeared on the radio at such a young age. And she, my mum has got no qualifications whatsoever, but she's the brightest person I ever knew and inspired me. And I always think of her. What would my mum say? I once presented a programme on Five Live, which is about the Constitution. And there was a big thing in the Radio Times about it. This is 25 years ago, 1996. And my mum said, sounds a bit boring to me, that, son. I might give it a listen. And that's your mum talking. So, you know, I always like to slightly be different, because it is me. And you are an extension of yourself in many respects, I would think, when you go on air. Maybe I'm a lot more than I am. Often when I'm off air, I'm rather quiet, usually because I've been talking on the radio all day.
And I think people who've been listening to this for the last 20 minutes or so will understand that you firmly meet the criteria for radio anorak. but you've even gone further than that, because you made some documentaries about radio, including one on Kenny Everett, or a couple on Kenny Everett, and won awards for those.
Well, that's the extraordinary thing about it. In a way, that was the real me. This is what I wanted to be, and pay homage to disc jockeys. Many people will dismiss, but they're my heroes. You know, they inspired me to get into broadcasting. So I did, fortunately, when Kenny Everett was fired by Radio 1 in 1970, he ended up on BBC Local Radio. And I recorded his programmes on my reel-to-reel Philips tape recorder at home as a 16-year-old and saved them. So when I joined the BBC, I put forward this idea to do a programme about the wilderness years of our greatest broadcaster. They weren't very keen, to be honest with you, thinking, well, you're kind of sniping at the BBC here. But I did the programme anyway, gave it to BBC Local Radio. Every one of them used it. And it was also used 29 times on Radio 4 Extra, who loved it. It is repeated many occasions, including on one occasion when Adam Hills, the comedian, put it in the comedy controller section of his programme. It was also used on the fifth anniversary of the station because the listeners had asked for it to be repeated. So it was a delight to do that. I was shortlisted for a Sony Radio Award, which were the Oscars of our industry. And I didn't win. Steve Lamacq of Radio 1 won, the swine. But I was very pleased with that programme so much. So I did a follow-up as well, which was called Happy Birthday Maurice Cole, because Maurice Cole was Kenny Everett's real name. And that programme won a Frank Gillard Award, a silver, for original journalism, no less. And it was original, and it was 40 years old as well. So I'm very pleased with that. Every time there was an anniversary for pirate radio, I put something together. One of them was about Radio Caroline North, which I thought was overshadowed somewhat, because everybody, when they mention Radio Caroline, will talk about their first broadcaster, Simon D, who became a chat show host on the BBC, and then ITV, and then lost his job. Or Tony Blackburn, who was one of the first broadcasters. Or Johnny Walker, who was there when they sailed into illegality. But there was a radio station broadcasting off the Isle of Man, Radio Caroline North. So I did a programme about that, which also won a Frank Gillard Award. I did a session at the Dutch Radio Festival about it, which you can watch on YouTube, which has really been put into, I think it's high definition, I noticed the other week. So that was a great day for me as well. And it's great to talk to all these people who inspired me to become a broadcaster. They all want to talk about me talking to politicians, to be honest with you. And I have interviewed, Stuart, 13 general elections I've covered, 10 prime ministers, and done 42 years of party conference. And the other trick is, I don't really care about politics. I haven't got a side to me on that. It's just I started covering them council meetings when I was a teenager and came back with lots of stories. The trick there, of course, is that you don't get all the best stories in the council meetings. It's when they go to the pub afterwards. And I'm not really much of a drinker, but I would follow them, buy them a pint, and after a few, they'd tell me everything. So that was another thing that got me into covering politics. But I'm also passionate about making politics accessible to people and understandable, even if people aren't following the nuances and subtleties of it at Westminster. But I've been at Westminster for so long, more than a third of a century. So it's been an extraordinary time. I've been so privileged to do what I do. There are far better broadcasters than me that sadly are no longer broadcasting because they've lost their jobs or they've retired or whatsoever. In theory, I have retired, but I'm sure it won't be too long before I find myself back behind a microphone. And I would just love talking to you today, Stuart, about the thing that I love, and the thing that I love is called radio.
Oh, and so many hours and hours on the radio. If you had to pick out a single moment from all that time over the last five decades that was your best moment, what would it be, do you think?
It had to be my final day because, you know, I was knocked out by the response. You know, I know people in the industry, a lot of them like what I do. There are a lot of people at the BBC don't like what I do. When I came, I thought a lot of BBC traditionalists clearly don't like what I do. As though I'm a commercial radio Johnny, you know, with all these references to football and pop music and the like. Politics is a very serious stuff. Well, it is, but, you know, you still have to connect with people to explain it all. But to hear Heather in Bamber Bridge crying with me on the radio and then, you know, playing Thank You for Being a Friend by Andrew Gold really took it out of me. And the other great moment on radio was to be privileged enough to cover my beloved football team, Wigan Athletic, first on Radio City in an FA Cup tie in 1974 when they played Mansfield Town. And because there was no phone box at Springfield Park, their old ground, I had to run over to the pub to file the reports. Thankfully, nobody scored in between me running between the ground and the pub. I thought it was going to be like that every week. It was the only time it ever happened. And they tell you that journalists spend too much time in pubs. And then in 2013, to be part of the commentary team on BBC Radio Manchester to cover Wigan Athletic winning the FA Cup against the odds when they beat Manchester City and getting paid for the privilege. I've had a wonderful life. I hope it's not the end of it by any means. But I've been truly humbled by the response from the people who really matter. And they are radio people, people who listen to the wireless like I've done for so long and will continue to do so even though technically I've retired.
I've been sat here with a smile on my face the whole time and I'm sure our listeners have as well. So it was your decision to leave the Bee, but what are you planning to do now? A bit of taking it easy and not getting up at 6 a.m. to do two ways?
I've never really taken it easy, and that's that's going to be the cultural shock for me. And to be honest with you, it's not been a job, it's been a joy. My dad worked in an asbestos factory for 26 years. My grandfather's were both Irish immigrants who worked down the mines. Seven of my uncles were miners. That's a job. That's a proper job. That really matters. Some people might see what I do as a bit of a frippery in certain respects. So I've been incredibly lucky from that background to do what I've been doing for so long, and people let me get away with it. The truth of the matter is, I suspect the higher management of the BBC don't really know what I do. And I can kind of get away with it on local stations if the management there and the presenters and the producers like what I do. So that's it. It's been an extraordinary time. I hope it's not the end of it. And I still listen to the radio, because looking at the radio, recent Radar figures which have come out, clearly lots of people are listening to both commercial radio, record listeners of 36.8 million, fantastic, and for BBC local radio, which have had their best audience share for a long time. So radio literally is booming at the moment. And booming, I have to dare admit, is my favourite radio station. Boom Radio, catered for audiences of my age, the boomer generation who lived through the pirates, early Radio 1, commercial radio in the 70s. And some of the presenters, though, I've worked with. Graham Dean and Bill Bingham were on Radio City when I was a young kid coming out at the weekends. They were the star presenters. I've interviewed Roger Day many a time for many of my documentary programmes. I've spoken to David Lloyd on Radio Nottingham, and Les Ross on BBC WM, and there are giants in broadcasting, and it's just a pleasure to listen to them, let alone know some of the greatest broadcasters in the country.
Well, I know that David and Phil listen to this, so if you're listening, guys, come on, let's make this 9-year-old boy's dreams come true. Let's get him a job on the radio as a DJ.
Hey, 7-year-old, I'll have you know, when I listen to Alan Freeman on Pick of the Pops. But I also listen to other things, you see. I love schools programmes. I love a drama on the old Home Service. I may have thought at one stage being an actor. Some people might think I'm a bit of an actor at times. You have to have that element as well. But no, Boom Radio is brilliant, but so is the whole concept of radio. And even though it changes, even though some of the presenters move on, even though the format's changed, it's still the greatest medium we have. And the work of radio today and your website and everything, Stuart, is excellent, and long may continue.
I won't take the credit for that. It's so good to talk to you, Paul, after all this time as well. We should have spoken sooner, really. We should have had you in the podcast years ago, but there we go. Such is life. We send you lots of good wishes for what might be a kind of mini retirement, but we hope to hear you on the radio again at some time in the future.
I hope so. I hope this isn't my final words, Stuart.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics.
Original music for this podcast was composed by Mikasa.